Welcome to Podcast Ed, the podcast of RedefinedOnline.org, covering the stories behind the new definition of public education. On this episode, Step Up for Students President Doug Tuthill talks with State Representative Ryan Martinez of District 39 in Edmond, Oklahoma. Rep. Martinez's deeply personal education choice story motivates him as a lawmaker to push to expand options for more families in the Sooner State. The two discuss Oklahoma's legislative successes this year, including expanding the tax credit scholarship program cap from $3.5 million to over $30 million, how Oklahoma's education choice landscape is inclusive of public and private options, and plans for expanding choice in the future. Thank you for listening, and enjoy the episode.
So today I'm excited to have Representative Ryan Martinez, who is from Edmond, Oklahoma, and is a major Ed Choice supporter and had a great success in the last legislative session that he's going to talk to us about. So welcome, Representative Martinez.
Hey, thanks, Doug. I'm happy to be here, and thanks for thinking of me and inviting me to the conversation.
I first want to talk a little bit about your story, because you gave very powerful testimony about your own childhood and kids you grew up with and why you think education and choice and empowering families to match their kids with the education options that best meet their needs, why you think that's so important. So if you don't mind, do you mind recalling that story about your childhood growing up and why that led you to beliefs that in education choice?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm happy to do it. I'll give you the kind of the brief version here. Me believing in choice is pretty simple. I mean, I'm living proof that giving people educational opportunities works and can truly save people's lives. So I grew up in an area just north of Denver, actually. And historically, it was a very large Hispanic community. And a lot of, you know, our parents, grandparents, sometimes great grandparents kind of came from the same parts of Mexico to be, you know, kind of migrant workers, to work on farms, to work in the coal mines, kind of stuff like that, kind of in the area. Anyway, historically speaking, that group kind of stayed there. Well, there was a public school district, and I would argue that I'd been failing people in my family and the families around me from pretty much the inception of them being there. So anyway, kind of as I grew up, it came time for me to go to school and for my friends to go to school, and my parents were faced with that tough decision of, what do? We don't have money. We don't really have any options other than to force our kid to go to the same failing school that failed them, and they knew it, and that failed their parents before them. And I was stuck. I went to that same school district. I was there like any other kid. Eventually, my parents realized, like, there's going to be no opportunity for my kid here, and we will do everything we can to try to find a way to make him have an option to go somewhere else. I ended up in a small private school. It was tough. My parents worked 3-4 jobs just to make sure that we could afford to do it. And there were a lot of times where we weren't sure if we were going to be able to do it. So anyway, what happened is I eventually, graduated high school. I was one of the first people in my college and my family to ever go to college, and graduate and do all that great stuff. But the thing that is really hard for me, and something that one of the reasons why I even ran for public office, was realizing that there are a lot of people that didn't get that opportunity. A lot of my friends, family members, people I still know or hear about, were trapped. They were trapped in that failing school district and in that place where there was no hope and they didn't have a chance to succeed or live up to their full potential. And, it's typical stories that you would hear, you might read about. I have friends that died of drug overdoses or ended up in prison from selling drugs, or are currently somewhere on that addiction scale where they're stuck, they're trapped. There's absolutely no hope and no hope to do better or realize that, hey, I'm worthy of succeeding and having an opportunity to do something. So for me, it's a no-brainer. I mean, I'm living proof. I was given an opportunity to succeed, and there's no doubt in my mind, if I wasn't given that educational opportunity, that it would have been really tough for me to come out of that situation and to be any different than the people that I grew up around or that I even consider friends to this day.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It is tough when you see the kids you grew up with not having an opportunity and seeing them end up in a very bad place. So I know that's tough to see, and I appreciate you sharing that story.
Sure. Well, thank you. Thanks for letting me share it.
Let's talk a little bit about the EdChoice programs in Oklahoma now. What's available today to families in Oklahoma?
Yeah, so kind of the approach that Oklahoma has taken is there's been some we set up something that's called the Equal Opportunity Education Scholarship, and that was designed several years back. It was capped at a $3.5 million rate. So basically, the way that the credit works is it's a 50% tax credit for a 1-year donation, and also and it could be up to 75% credit with a written 2-year commitment if those dollars are going to be used towards educational opportunities. Uh-huh. So that cap was at about $3.5 million. That filled up quickly. $3.5 million isn't a lot. Now that was stretched. There's about 3,200 kids that were utilizing that scholarship to go to a private school and get an educational opportunity. Well, this year, I'm happy to say that we had a great success and we're able to raise that cap. That cap went up to about $31 million.
Wow.
So that changes, just to put it into perspective. I know a lot of times in these conversations, it's easy to talk about dollar amounts, but it looks like with the increased cap, we go from about 3,200 kids to about 22,000 kids.
Wow.
That could potentially be served. Is it perfect? Is it the end of the road? No way. Well, there's a lot more work to do, but this is a big step and something that will help a lot more kids in Oklahoma.
Talk to me about the politics. I know a lot of your colleagues around the country are having to negotiate, you know, through a legislative process. I noticed that there's a public school component as well as a private school component. I presume the public school component is designed to sort of bring in school board associations and other groups that might historically oppose a broad education choice program. Talk about how you guys decided to do that and how that works.
Yeah, so this has been, as you can imagine, I'm sure you hear out of other states, this has been a multi-year conversation.
Yeah.
And we kept finding ourselves, and I say ourselves, kind of the group of us that consider ourselves true school choice believers. We just kind of kept getting hung up on a couple things. And one of the issues that we kept hearing is, so Oklahoma is a legislature that is very rural dominated. Uh-huh. So a lot of my colleagues from rural areas, one of their biggest arguments was, hey, I don't even have a private school anywhere near me, right? So how is this going to help any of my constituents or their kids or any of these things? You know, they'd have to drive 2.5 hours to get to the closest private school. So there quickly became this idea. So there's always been a component in our opportunity scholarship from the beginning for public schools and public school foundations to utilize the same credit. But it became pretty evident to get more people interested, especially rural legislators, to understand that this could really help their public schools. There is also a component where it's about a 60-40 split. So public school foundations, public school boards, they are eligible for that credit to get more dollars into their classrooms as well. As you can imagine, that helped kind of expand the coalition of people that we needed to get this important bill passed.
So during the pandemic, there was obviously a huge national explosion in homeschooling. At some point, virtually everybody had to be homeschooled, really.
Sure.
But, you know, there a lot of families found it successful, and there's a lot of interest in continuing that. The challenge, of course, is for low-income families to be able to afford to be able to homeschool in the same way more affluent families are. I'm curious if there's any conversations in Oklahoma about that. I know about a dozen states this year introduced education savings accounts, and the purpose there was to give families more flexibility. So most opportunity scholarships are only for private school tuition and fees, but ESAs allow much broader expenditure of funds, which also allows in homeschool families to get into the mix. I'm curious if there was any discussion about that in Oklahoma, about expanding the use of scholarships so that homeschool families could also participate, maybe give some more flexibility for how the dollars could be spent.
I absolutely. I mean, honestly, that's kind of, I think, where the conversation continues from here, is kind of what that ESA program would look like, to really let people keep, let's face it, more of their own money to decide how they could best educate their kids. And if that's going to be homeschool, private school, you know, whatever works best for them. That is very much part of the conversation. I think this idea of the ESA program is it's something that even works with a lot of my rural colleagues, of course.
Right.
You know, it gives rural parents, it gives urban, suburban parents the opportunity to really decide where those education dollars are best spent for their family. And absolutely part of the conversation.
Yeah, when you talked about the rural challenge, that's when I thought about ESAs, because that sort of levels the playing field. So even though you might be in a community without a private school, you can still homeschool. And that also, you know, with the funding, that allows you to be able to do that. Is there a robust online virtual program in Oklahoma? Are kids able to enroll in part-time or full-time online programs?
Yeah, absolutely. So the largest school district in Oklahoma is actually a virtual charter school.
Interesting. So
there is very much a robust online program. I do think it is interesting because the pandemic did kind of show some people that, wow, this is an option that might work better for me and my family. I represent an area just north of Oklahoma City. It's Edmond, Oklahoma, and it's probably considered to be more affluent and one of the best school districts in the state. So people kind of assume like, oh, your kids go to Edmond Public Schools, like no worries, everything's great. Well, I've had more constituents contact me during or after the pandemic and said, you know what, this is wonderful. Being able to do a online option has been wonderful for my family. It's been good. Homeschooling has been good. So it's not really necessarily, hey, this is a bad school district and the only option is for my kid to go somewhere else. A lot of times it's not a bad school district, but it's just not working. It's just not working for that specific family. And they're starting to realize that there are other options for them. Just need to make that more attainable for more people.
Yeah, I tell people that for every child, every school potentially could be a failing school. I mean, Harvard, you know, fails a lot of kids.
Sure.
Doesn't mean Harvard's not a great school, but it's about the match that's really important.
That's exactly right. No, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, they're even in my own family. It's funny, I kind of talk about my story where I ended up in a small private school and it saved my life. Well, I have an older sister who stayed in public school and she succeeded. She did fine there. She found a way to make it work and it fit her well and she had some success. It clearly was not going to be the case for me. So it's just like you said, about finding the right match and what works for you and for the family. So
I'm curious to talk a little bit more about moving forward. You talked about discussions about ESAs. I'm also curious about the amount of the credit you get for a donation, a 50% or 75%. In some states, it's hard to get that much money raised because, you know, you're asking people to take a hit.
Sure.
I'm curious, is there any dialogue about perhaps increasing that that tax credit so you can raise more money?
Absolutely. I think that's definitely part of the conversation. And I'll just obviously give a nod to Florida. It's kind of one of the places where, you know, someone like me can point to and like wow, look what Florida's doing. You know, they're doing some really, really great stuff. So yeah, that's definitely part of the conversation. I think initially it was pretty evident that the cap was so low that it's being utilized so quickly. So that was the first thing we needed to do, and getting that across the finish line. I think the conversation does turn to ESAs, as mentioned before, but also talking about that, you're exactly right. All of a sudden, 100% tax credit. Well, it certainly makes it a lot easier to write a nice size check to allow more kids to be educated. So
a lot of your colleagues around the country, you know, they struggle to get bipartisan support. Obviously, around the country, a lot of the ed choice legislation primarily moves in red states. Now, you've done some things to try to bring Dems over, which is including the public school piece, which also, I suspect, helps you out with rural Republicans. Do you have any advice about things you can do to sort of make this more bipartisan? What can you do to bring in your Dem colleagues to make this make the ed choice programs more bipartisan and a little less contentious in the legislature? Do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. So my view is, and heck, maybe it's a little naive at some point, is is a lot of times you can, in Oklahoma City, for example, I'll just use a very excellent program. It's called Positive Tomorrows. It's a school that is 100% dedicated to homeless children. These are kids that literally are living in cars. I mean, you know, they don't have anywhere to really lay their head down at night. well, this is a school 100% dedicated to them. They actually have a transportation program set up where they will, you know, if you're sleeping in a car on one street one night and then the next night you're on the other side of town, they're coming to pick you up and getting you to school. It's a really amazing program. Well, that's right in the heart of Oklahoma City, and kind of what you see around the country, obviously, is a lot of these urban districts are held by Democrats across the aisle. So I think really having those schools engaged, having those legislators having the opportunity to meet their constituents that are, you know, that are actually having a shot in life to succeed, I think that changes the perspective pretty quickly. And I think there's been some success with that and realizing that, you know, there's this big conversation in our culture right now around justice reform.
Yeah.
Great conversation. Let's have it. I would argue that this is something that you could mitigate somebody ever being in the justice system before they ever even have to worry about that. You know, I do think that there are some parallels there and some opportunities where there are truly some of my colleagues across the aisle that might represent areas where they feel like there's been a failing school, where it's been a school that they were forced to go to, their parents, kind of the same situation I was in. Without naming any names, there's, you know, colleagues on the other side of the aisle that get that, that see it all the time, that their constituents just don't have any opportunities. They need to do something different. So I think that's where the conversation is based on. Let's talk about empowering people to truly take control of their own lives and succeed. Now, is that a tough conversation? Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, I'd imagine it's not only Oklahoma, you know, it turns into kind of this adversarial relationship that if you're not, you know, if you're for school choice and you hate public schools, that's not the case at all. I mean, I'm pro public education. I want to succeed. I want to do everything I can to make sure we have a robust public education system. But the realization that it's not one or the other, that you could do things that are good for both. And I think this is very much the case with the way we set up our scholarship, that this is good for public and private education.
Yeah, it's interesting. In Florida, you know, our program for years is primarily focused on low-income kids. And about 75% of those kids are kids of color, minority kids.
Sure.
And they tend to primarily come out of Democratic districts, and yet the Republicans have been doing all the heavy lifting politically. But what's interesting is in private, the Democrats say, look, I get it. You know, I've got 1,000, 2,000 kids in my district on scholarship.
Yeah.
You know, but I can't publicly support it for political reasons. So it's a tough conversation, but it would be great to get to a point where this really does become genuinely bipartisan. It'll be interesting to see around the country as the momentum continues to grow, whether we can get something that's really not contentious and people all come together. Because the challenge of poverty, generational poverty, is really tough, as you know. I mean, your own story is pretty powerful. And you kind of need all hands on deck, and be nice to get there in legislators around the country.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I'll even go one step further. I mean, I talked to a lot of my colleagues, you know, for the first time ever in Oklahoma history, we started the Latino Caucus.
Wow.
There are four of us. There's not a lot. It's bipartisan. But right. We have this conversation a lot of, listen, I mean, how long does this need to continue before we realize that we have to do something different? How many generations need to be lost in a system that's just not working for them? And, you know, that's obviously a debate that happens, and it's usually a pretty robust debate between even the members of that small caucus. But to me, I think that there are more eyes being opened after pandemic times, after all these, where people, like I said, once again, parents feel empowered. And I think that was one of the things that really came out of the pandemic. All of a sudden, these parents felt really empowered to say, I could do this. You know, I just, you know, there's always this fear, I think, for a lot of parents, like homeschooling, that's a heavy lift. You know, I mean, that's, most people don't feel like, you know, where do I start? What does that look like? I do think more people were empowered to do that. And I think that's, you know, your average Oklahoman or American, they don't care if you're Republican, Democrat, or anything in between. They just want to make sure that their kids have a shot to succeed, and will do anything they can to make that work.
Any final thoughts you have for colleagues around the country who are also trying to, you know, replicate the success you've had in Oklahoma?
Yeah, absolutely. I would just say keep up the good fight. I mean, it is a tough road sometimes. Believe me, there'd be plenty of times I would come home at night and I felt like I just banged my head against the brick wall for, you know, 3 days. And right. It was one of those moments where like, why am I even doing this? I'm not, you know. stick with it. It matters. I even talked to some of the other folks in my caucus that I'm living proof that you're saving lives. Truly, this is something that is life or death for some people, and this is going to have a ripple effect. This will change our society, and this is a very worthy cause. Every small step forward is the right direction, and let's just keep working on it.